PG&E is in the midst of a bankruptcy proceeding that could see them undergo significant restructuring. While fire safety will be key for them going forward, leaning more on green energy and also doing less harm to the climate will be also essential as well. Joining us now on the KSRO Liveline, former principal in market and infrastructure policy at the California Independent System Operator, it's a mouthful there, Lorenzo Christoph. Good morning, Lorenzo.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you on. In your article that you co-wrote for the Chronicle called "Don't Let PG&E's Perfectly Good Bankruptcy Go to Waste," pun there, you say that PG&E presently structured isn't ideal for moving towards green energy. How is that?
A couple of ways. One of the things that that we realized in thinking about what needed to change is that the transformation to green energy is really going to be, to a great extent, a bottom-up exercise, which is going to happen through local governments and communities. That decarbonization and resilience, which are kind of the two big buzzwords, decarbonization to reduce the long-term impacts of greenhouse gas by changing the way we do a lot of daily things, transportation and buildings being really important, and resilience to be able to have greater strength to resist disruptive events. These are local planning activities. And in order to achieve those, we need a structure for greater partnerships between electric distribution utilities, which is what one of PG&E's jobs, and the local governments where these planning activities take place. PG&E as structured is not very conducive to the growth of local distributed power systems and local distributed resources. And I'm not talking about just rooftop solar, but actually community level facilities where you reinforce, say, the resilience of a critical facility locally, or where you develop a 2, 3, 4 megawatt size community solar plus storage facility. Right now, the rules are not conducive for that. The big ability for local clean resources to be economically sound is going to come from being able to offset infrastructure. The cost of expanding the distribution grid to have more local clean energy, et cetera. But PG&E's profits come directly from building more infrastructure and getting a rate of return on assets. So one of the things that needs to happen is to change the incentive structure for them so that they're incentivized to partner with local governments, develop local energy projects, and be compensated in a way for their performance. How well are they doing their job of helping communities and local governments become more resilient and become more decarbonized, rather than trying to build more assets on which they're going to earn a rate of return?
Wouldn't this put PG&E kind of in an awkward position, just kind of being more of a middle person rather than just an energy supplier?
Well, they're already playing numerous roles that have been broken up. The history of utilities like PG&E, they've been called vertically integrated in the past, prior to the 1990s, where they own generating plants, they own high voltage transmission, they own low voltage distribution wires that go to the customer premises, and they had a monopoly over the customers that they serve. Well, that all changed in the 1990s. So as they still own the transmission wires, they still own and operate the distribution wires, and but they lost their monopoly over retail customers in the 1990s when the restructuring first took place, and they started to divest most of the generating plants they have. So generating plants are a competitive market. The retail landscape has been really transforming, especially with the rise of community choice aggregation. In Santa Rosa, you have Sonoma Clean Power as your community choice aggregator, but that phenomenon, that structure where a local government takes over the retail energy supply for its territory, that's happening all over the state, but most intensely in PG&E's territory. So the notion of them focusing on being a distribution wires service company where they actually play a role to facilitate clean energy transformation and resilience is not too far-fetched from where they are today, but it does take some significant action at the legislature, at the Public Utilities Commission, to make this change to their corporate structure and how they're organized, and to ensure that as you make them a purely distribution wires company, that you really go back to the emphasis on all of the safety concerns that have come to the forefront. Mm-hmm. That's really what sparked the bankruptcy and the PUC investigation that's going on, was the question of what are the causes of some of the fire damage and the extent of how they maintain safety mm-hmm. on a distribution system and so on. So I don't think it's that huge a stretch, but it's a different way of thinking about them.
Now of course, it does seem like it would be better safety-wise for them just to focus on the lines, but wouldn't that be more with who's running a PG&E or the board members that are currently in charge?
Well, no matter who the executives are and the board members are, there still is this incentive to maximize shareholder value through the mechanism by which they make profits. And the mechanism by which they make profits is building assets and getting a rate of return on those assets. So yes, you could, working through the board and the leadership, you could improve some of their safety practices and improve some of the regulation on them. But as long as they have an incentive to build more assets for a rate of return and don't have this complementary incentive on how well are they partnering with communities and advancing the decarbonization and resilience goals, then there will be something missing. Basically, boards and executives respond to the incentive structure, mm-hmm. and that's what needs to be changed through the political process regulatory process.
Does PG&E as a whole survive this bankruptcy process, and do they come out looking this significantly different on the other side?
Well, I think they could survive very well as a distribution company. They would still own their transmission assets as well, which are under the operational control of the ISO, and that's sort of part of what we're suggesting is that the way the ISO is a separate entity that runs the transmission system, it's subject to open access rules. We're not suggesting that you should create a separate entity on distribution, but we are suggesting that you need to apply these open access rules to enable third parties to develop distributed resources. I think that could be a very positive role for PG&E. And also, I think it is minimally disruptive to the actual day-to-day functions that they perform and the people who work for them. Mm-hmm. Because the issue is not about who the people who are doing the real work for PG&E, and I know many of them personally and work with them. It's really about the corporate structure that's created at the legislative and regulatory level. Mm-hmm. So in terms of day-to-day activities, their labor force, much of that stays, almost all of that stays the same.
Well, thank you very much for your input, Lorenzo. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thank you very much for having me on the show.
Of course. That is Lorenzo Kristoff. He is, or at least was, a former principal in market and infrastructure policy at the California Independent System Operator.